Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos and aquariums and conservation and all that good stuff. Y'all, it has been an interesting week for me, to say the least. Still doing shows at Media Theater, MDQ, basically a week and a half left, you know, and looking forward to the next adventure for sure. But actually, adventure is the key of today's intro talking, because I was thinking about this, and I was talking to a friend about this, and there's something about me, you know, y'all know that I go and have these crazy adventures and do zoo things and tour around the country for zoos and for music and all the stuff that I do. But, like, I'm really not a big planner when it comes to doing all of these things, which is something that might surprise a lot of you. You know, I know most people, when you plan a trip or you plan a vacation, you plan it, you know, in advance, like normal human beings do. For me, when I'm on tour, obviously everything's planned out, but I usually don't know what's going on until the day of any given day. I frequently look like a day or two ahead to try and contact zoos and get some interviews and stuff. And I've actually gotten better at that. Sometimes I even look weeks in advance because PR people need, you know, time to process and decide that they love me and let me come and, you know, play with their animals. But before this podcast, I legitimately never knew what I was doing or what city I was going to or anything like that until the night before. I would look at something that we get on tour called City Sheets. And they are sheets that tell you the next city you're going to and where the cool coffee houses are and best restaurants and where you're staying and how far you'll be from the venue. And I literally would not look until the night before and then find out where I was going the next day and then kind of plan my day around that. Now, again, with the podcast, that has changed. But when I'm not on tour, I have this habit of booking my adventures and you know, obviously working with the PR people and heading to the zoos and aquariums and all that stuff. But then I don't really figure out where I'm staying, where I'm eating, if I know people in town who I could hang out with or any of that stuff until I'm on my way. I am notorious for, like, stopping at a gas station halfway into a 7-hour drive, and while I'm filling up, being like, oh yeah, I should probably figure out what hotel I'm staying at tonight. Now, granted, I stay exclusively at Hilton hotels because of their point system and their digital keys and all of that. So it kind of narrows it down a bit. But yeah, this is how I live my life. I would say that there are probably as many as 50 to 60 nights every year where when I wake up, I don't know where I'm going to be sleeping that evening. And, like, sometimes it's really crazy. So I visited Greensboro Science Center over my weekend recently, which for me on this gig, my weekend is Monday and Tuesday. And as I left Greensboro Science Center, I really didn't know where I was staying. And let me be clear, I don't mean like I didn't know what hotel I was staying at. I mean that it was Monday. It was about 2 p.m., 3 p.m., something like that. And I really didn't have a plan of action. I could have driven back to my Philly area home, and then I knew I was going to see Miles the next day, so I could have done that. Or I could have driven to the area that Miles lives in and then gotten a hotel room there. Or I could have driven to Leesburg, Virginia, where my parents live, and stayed with them and visited them and then left early the next day to go see Miles. And then it occurred to me that my buddy Randy actually lived directly on the way between Greensboro and Miles. And so I texted him and I was like, yo, what are you doing tonight? And he was like, I got nothing. And I was like, cool, I'm gonna come stay with you and we'll grab dinner and hang out and be friends. And so that's what I ended up doing. And I guess this is just such a normal thing in my life that it's never really occurred to me until I was talking to some people about it recently, that, like, almost all of you will go through an entire year and never have a night where you don't know where you're going to be laying your head. And for me, it's just very common. I don't even know what state I'm going to be sleeping in many times every year. I don't know if that means I'm crazy or if it's really cool or what, but whatever. It makes me happy. Anyway, this is Rossafari Zoo News, and it is a crowdsourced news program. So a friendly reminder that if you happen to see any Zoo News worthy stories, you can go ahead and tag me in them on socials at Rossafari or TikTok at Rossafari Pod, or email them to me, rossafaripod@gmail.com. And I will say your name at the end of the episode, unless I forget like a big dummy, in which case I'll then do it the next week when you yell at me on social media. That's actually only happened once in the 2 years of Zoo News. So pretty proud of that. But anyway, that's enough about me. Let's get to it. All right, y'all, I'm going to start this one off on my soapbox. So if you don't want to hear my thoughts on the fact that it is now Pride, then you should skip a couple minutes ahead and get to births and deaths of animals. Because y'all, it is Pride Month, and I cannot believe the ridiculous way that people have come out against zoos having Pride events and even just posting Happy Pride and letting people know that all are welcome at the zoo. Because guess what, y'all? All should be welcome at the zoo. This is not a political topic, okay? People are making it out to be a political topic because they have been coerced by certain networks and celebrities and people who really, by the way, absolutely don't give a crap about this topic, but know that it's a hot button issue and know that they can manipulate people who are easily led into stupid groupthink to rant and rave about it. So yeah, like right now, Zoo Knoxville announced their Pride Night, and a whole bunch of people went and said they're disappointed and said that, you know, they're not going to go to Zoo Knoxville ever again. And then the same thing started to happen at Akron, and Seneca Park Zoo announced that they're going to have a drag performer at the zoo for their Pride event, and people were complaining about that. And it just blows my mind. First of all, let people exist. This does not affect you. And I know that most of you listening to this, if not all of you, agree with me. I'm going to try to not make it seem like I'm yelling at you. And I'm sorry if I do. I'm just really passionate about this topic. And, you know, it's just so disgusting seeing that in the last couple of years, people have seemed to just become more and more emboldened, especially online, to just say this stuff. And, you know, I need to take it even a step further here and say that in the arguments that I see now and in the comments that I see posted now, one of the biggest things that I see is people saying that the zoo are acting as groomers. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about here, I'm not talking about the fact that they groom their animals or that the primates at the zoo groom each other. I'm talking about this concept that has become like a really big worry in conservative circles right now that absolutely boggles my mind. And the idea is that basically that if you are an organization or an individual or whatever that promotes any kind of LGBTQIA plus things, then you are secretly or maybe not so secretly trying to turn children gay or trans, or you pick a letter from the alphabet and you know, that thing. And I have to say, y'all, as a straight cis man, I don't experience the hatred and the constant put downs that people in the LGBT plus community do, you know, experience. And I understand that. But also, I know what my own lived experience is. And I got to tell you, there's not a book or a person or an event that could make me want to do sexual things that I'm not interested in doing. Like, what do these people think is going to happen? You're going to go to Pride Night at a zoo, and all of a sudden, you're going to be like, oh, I think I want a penis now. I would like to go play with a penis. Like, is that what they think is going? This does not make sense. This does not happen in the human world. This does not happen in the animal kingdom. This is the dumbest of the dumb. And people are convinced this is happening now. And now they are attacking zoos, which are important educational facilities, which really are one of the last bastions of places where you can get a lot of people who disagree with, you know, very settled science like evolution, because they want to go, they want to walk around, they want to see the cute animals, and you can educate them there. And now they're implying that these places are trying to turn people gay or make people trans? That's not how this works. It's so annoying and so mind-boggling to me. And I'm so proud of the facilities that are just standing up for it. And they're just doing their pride events and, you know, cool, cool, cool. I fear a little bit from, you know, some other things that have happened that some protests may happen or some things may get violent. And I hope that's not the case. But I encourage all of these zoos to go ahead with that. And I am so proud of every facility that is taking a stand, especially one like Zoo Knoxville, where they know. I mean, if they post something about evolution, they get attacked. So if you see any posts about any facilities doing pride, please go and just leave a positive comment. It's a beautiful thing. It's a good thing. Animals are for everyone. Zoos are for everyone. Science is for everyone. You can't, I don't care how many red pandas you show me and then say you should be gay. I'm not going to be gay. I mean, what do they think is happening? This honestly blows my mind. And I'm sorry that you have to listen to this full long rant here if it's not your thing, but like, it's just so dumb. We've just become so dumb. I can't even process it. So yeah, please go and support the zoos that are supporting humans existing and being true to themselves. And, you know, that leads me to want to address something that happened recently. And I've been debating talking about this on the pod for a bit now. But hey, it's Pride. And so why not? I had, in the not-so-recent past, a guest on who was actually a guest that was provided to me. I don't want to give a lot of details here. But this guest was a wonderful guest and had a ton of great information, and it was a great episode. It's actually an episode that I received a lot of very, very positive feedback about. However, it turns out that the guest does not agree with my take on what I just said and posts things that come across as transphobic and possibly homophobic and honestly even denies climate change, which how you deny climate change when you work in this field is so beyond me. But hey, whatever. And you know, I was unaware of that fact at the time, and I did not promote this person's social media at all, but I did have a listener reach out and tell me that they looked the person up, and they were very offended that I had that kind of person on my podcast. And I did a lot of deep thinking, and I posted some stories to my close friends and supporters of the podcast asking their thoughts on the topic, and everyone was overwhelmingly aligned with me that the episode should stay. I should not promote the social media, and that, you know, we have to, in the conservation community, work with everyone. I mean, you know, looking at a recent episode, my Path of the Panther episode, we talked with Carlton Ward Jr., who was definitely not this guest, by the way, about the fact that, you know, Florida does a ton of amazing conservation work in their government, even though it is a heavily conservative government. But, you know, the people that are doing the work have made great connections with those politicians. And as such, they're able to do amazing conservation work, which is not what you would expect from a state with the government makeup that Florida has. So we need to partner with people who are not like-minded to save the planet, to save animals. You know, there are actually a couple other instances of time where I have donated to people who are raising money for conservation organizations that I believe in or whatever. And I've looked at their pages and I do not align with their values. But we do align on the fact that we are trying to save, you know, insert animal here. And that's cool. And we can partner on that. And I don't have to think about what you think about our current president or any of that kind of stuff. So that is where I am with it. And that is why that episode is up for those that have noticed that. And you know, the person who felt the need to give me a really bad review on Spotify because of it, that's fine. I accept that. I understand. And I'm sorry that you felt the need to do that, if you're still listening, which I honestly doubt. But yeah, I hear you, and I know where it's coming from. But I want to state unequivocally on you know, the start of Pride here, that the Rossafari podcast is a truly safe and inclusive space. I am a firm supporter. I am a firm ally. I am here for all of the Pride events. And anybody who ever wants to discuss any of that stuff with me is more than welcome to reach out. And if I need to do better and if I need to learn, then tell me that. And just know that this is a safe space. And we may not always agree with all of our guests, but I am here for every person being their unique, wonderful selves and being, you know, full of pride for that. So, yeah, I just wanted to state that officially. And I guess that's all I have to say about that right now. So let's move on to some other stuff. This past week, the Rhode Island Department of Children, Youth, and Families hosted a Night of the Zoo foster parent appreciation event at Roger Williams Park Zoo in Providence, Rhode Island. It was a beautiful way for the DCYF and Roger Williams Park Zoo to say thank you for the support, compassion, and dedication of foster parents and for that making the system of care possible. And it was a really wonderful event, and I think it's really cool that the zoo got to be a part of that. Weirdly, no one protested. And that brings us to another fun list of the best zoos in the U.S. that got published recently. This was done by timeout.com, and they listed them in order, which I will quickly read to you all in reverse order to make it more interesting. So they did, they actually did a bunch, but I'm going to do the top 12. So coming in at number 12 was the San Francisco Zoo in California. Number 11 was the Houston Zoo in Texas. And then we get to the top 10. The Alaska Zoo in Anchorage, Alaska came in at number 10. The Oakland Zoo in Oakland, California came in at number 9. Brookfield Zoo right outside of Chicago in Brookfield, Illinois was number 8. The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden in Cincinnati, Ohio was number 7. Number 6 was the Bronx Zoo in New York City, New York. Number 5 was the Dallas Zoological Park, the Dallas Zoo in Marsalis Park, Texas, which is, you know, obviously right near Dallas. Number 4, coming in very high and very hot, is the Pittsburgh Zoo and PPG Aquarium in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Number 3 is the Denver Zoo in Denver, Colorado. Number 2 is the Henry Dorley Zoo in Omaha, Nebraska. And number 1 is the San Diego Zoo in San Diego, California. So while it was really cool to see San Diego up so high and just to kind of read the opinions of these people, I have to say I thought it was really interesting to see that Cheyenne Mountain Zoo was not listed at all on the list. They're usually right near the top. And so I think that was a bit of a miss. But overall, I think that's a pretty darn good list. I would change some orders and swap some stuff, but I ain't complaining. So there you go. All right, so now it is time to touch on births and deaths that happened recently. And as I've been trying to do these last couple of weeks, I'm trying to condense these a little bit, make them a little bit quicker, so we can get more in and celebrate more awesome things or more and more sad things. which honestly are usually still pretty awesome because they're usually good stories. So this week in births, we have a really exciting birth at the Greensboro Science Center, where they just recently had the Bintlets that I posted a picture of yesterday and that that are just the cutest things ever. Don't forget, this is also the home of Ravi, the juvenile red panda, who is basically the most adorable and playful panda I've ever seen. Well, now they have announced that there is a new pygmy hippo baby, pygmy hipplet, at the Greensboro Science Center. And this is really exciting. The hipplet is on display already, although they are definitely giving the mother and baby a lot of breaks because mom seemed a little nervous. She's a first-time mom. I actually visited Greensboro Science Center earlier this week, and I got to see the baby hipplet. It is the cutest thing I have ever seen, except for maybe Ravi and their baby binturongs, their bintlets, which are also, it's a good time to go to the Greensboro Science Center is really what I'm saying right now. And I actually want to say thanks to my friends at the Greensboro Science Center for allowing me to get a chance to take a look at that pygmy hippo while the area was technically closed for non-staff. I appreciate y'all so much. The Bronx Zoo has announced the birth of an incredibly rare Andean cock of the rock, which is a type of bird, in case you don't know that, which I guess with our little jokey naming thing would be a cocklet. I'm just going to leave that there. Oh, I am a child. Anyway, the Como Zoo has announced the birth of a snow leopard cub, a snow leplet. And I think, you know, it's pretty rare to see snow leopards born in captivity these days. So that is beyond exciting. Fossil Rim has announced not one, but two litters of black-footed cat kittens. Or I guess catlets. That's not as good because we all know kittens. But yeah, they've had two different litters born recently. And again, not a species that you hear a lot of births happening. So the fact that they had two litters is very cool. Smithsonian's National Zoo has announced a new baby gorilla, a gorillet, and I'm always fascinated watching gorillas grow up. I've gotten to do that a couple of times at the Philadelphia Zoo, and you know they grow a lot slower than a lot of other animal species. It's actually more akin to how we grow. So if you happen to be near the Smithsonian Zoo, this is a great opportunity to go see a baby gorilla and then keep checking in and watching that slow and incredible growth process. I highly recommend doing that. It's an amazing way to bond with an animal, even through glass, you know? Disney's Animal Kingdom has announced the birth of a new yellow-backed duiker calf, a duiklet, named Penny. And so Penny is now on exhibit at Animal Kingdom. If you don't know what a yellow-backed duiker is, all duikers in general are just really cute hoofstock. I highly recommend that you check them out. Three baby peccaries, pecklets, are now living at the Living Desert out in California. And it seems like there's a bit of a push to have peccaries in more zoos. Elmwood Park Zoo has had amazing success with two litters of pecklets in recently. And if you don't know what a peccary is, it is a pig species, and they're very cute. They have really short legs and really big bodies that looks like the leg shouldn't support, and I thoroughly enjoy them. So definitely worth checking out at Living Desert to see pictures of that. And then some exciting conservation birth news. Brookfield Zoo welcomed seven Mexican wolves. Seven. That's so exciting. Seven wolvelets. And one of them is staying at the zoo, but the other six were placed out in wild Mexican wolf dens to help bolster the population, which is such an incredible program and definitely something I need to figure out a way to talk about on Conservation Tales down the road. So congrats to all the incredible births that happened recently. And of course, after the excitement of births comes the sadness of death. We're going to talk about a couple of animals that had to say goodbye this week. For starters, Woodland Park Zoo announced the death of 13-year-old geriatric gray wolf named Kaya. Unfortunately, Kaya needed a procedure done and never woke up from the anesthesia, something that is unfortunately common in ZooMed, where we don't quite have the research all the time that we do into pet med. So that's one reason to support Wild Animal Health Fund, by the way, which do a lot of those important studies. She was a beautiful wolf, and right now there's only one remaining geriatric wolf, Shiloh, still at the zoo. So the team is currently assessing the next steps for the well-being of Shiloh and also are showering her with love and attention. So it's sad not just for the humans, but also for, Shiloh, the friend of the wolf that has passed. The zoo is working on figuring out the best way to take care of that, and I'm just so proud of them for taking that into consideration and for being such great keepers. Sending all my love to the team at Woodland Park Zoo. Sedgwick County Zoo recently had to decide to euthanize their 50-year-old hippo named Pudgy. Pudgy, obviously at 50 years old, was at a very advanced age and was dealing with all kinds of health and mobility issues and getting all kinds of specialized care. But unfortunately, she recently took a downward turn, and as such, they decided to humanely euthanize Pudgy. Pudgy was apparently very bossy, making sure she always got what she wanted and only on her terms. She was stubborn, but made a lot of really wonderful noise and always begged for treats and tongue scratches. It's crazy to think that Pudgy literally lived her entire life in Wichita at this zoo. So there are literally people there who have spent 50 years watching this hippo grow. Truly, truly a loss to that community. Again, sending all of our condolences to everyone who loved Pudgy. Also sending condolences to the primate team at the Columbus Zoo for their loss of Maiko. Maiko was born in 1984 at the Memphis Zoo and then moved to Columbus in 2005. He was actually one of the first two apes in their care to receive an implanted loop recorder as part of the Great Ape Heart Project, which we've talked about on here before and which is really amazing. So along with it helping Maiko continue to live his best life, he also was able to give that information to the animal health and animal care teams to then understand more about bonobos in general. In fact, it was recently the cardiac and renal health that they noticed in decline, in part because of the research that they did into how his heart was working. And so sadly, they had to make the decision to euthanize at the age of 38. He will be missed. And then this last one is really sad for me. I have had an internal debate for many years now, basically since I started this podcast, about whether or not to reach out to a place known as Animal Magic Incorporated. They are really it's one person who has a small group of ambassador animals that he uses for shows and meet and greets and stuff. And obviously has all of the normal licensure stuff. It's not through a zoo, so there is no accreditation possibility. And I always wonder how I feel about those things, but the main reason that I felt like reaching out is because the star of Animal Magic Inc. was a binturong named Popcorn. And Popcorn was the sweetest, kindest binturong. She was just so silly. And just such a love, and, would travel all through the country going to do these cool meet and greets and stuff. And, sadly, there was cancer, in Popcorn that spread throughout her body, and, the choice had to be made to euthanize. And, it's heartbreaking. And, it's up to you whether you go to Animal Magic Inc.'s Facebook page, but there is video of saying goodbye to popcorn, including seeing the euthanized body getting ready for burial. I've been following popcorn for a long time. I don't usually follow unaccredited things, but this relationship felt so special, and I've gone back and forth so many times on it, and it's heartbreaking to see popcorn gone. And I right now really regret not not talking to them and trying to get out there and meet popcorn. I think I missed a real opportunity to meet a real special animal who had a real special bond with her keeper. So unfortunately, we now say goodbye to Popcorn the Binturong. On a much lighter note, a red panda recently escaped from Newquay Zoo in the UK. Now, if you don't know this, red pandas are escape artists. It's one of my favorite facts about them, that in captivity, they often find a way not to be in captivity at a much higher rate than you would expect from a cute little animal like a red panda. And so, yeah, the red panda escaped from the Newquay Zoo, which is in Cornwall. And I guess there was a greengrocer, a grocery store, about a half mile from the zoo where the staff outside just saw a panda just wandering down the street being happy. So they called the police, and the police went and picked up the panda and took it, you know, into custody. No, they took care of it until the zoo was able to go and collect their panda, which is now back on exhibit, and everything is fine. But I always love a good red panda escape story. And man, I love the idea of just being at work and looking out and being like, oh, look, is that a red panda? That would make my whole life. Just saying. The Oregon Zoo in Portland, Oregon, has officially created a dummy egg, which is a electronic replica condor egg created by a 3D printer that records sound, temperature, movement, and other data critical to saving the species. And it seems to be working so far. So this fake egg is able to not only hold the chicks before they hatch, but get wildly important data so that we can understand more about California condors as they're growing in the egg. And this is just a huge step in understanding and getting to the next level of conserving this important species. So go Oregon Zoo! I recently mentioned on here that Zoo Montana has welcomed two wolverine kits. Wolflets? Wolverlets? Wolf? Anyway. And that there was a naming contest for them. Welp, the winning names have been announced, and Kova and Villy are the two wolverine babies at Zoo Montana. So for all of you in Montana, all, you know, dozen of you, you can now go and meet Kova and Villy. The Columbus Zoo has announced that Mara, one of the Amur tigers that lives there, has been fitted with a GPS collar that is providing data that helps scientists to better understand what she does and hopefully apply that knowledge to her wild counterparts in Nepal. This is a kind of research that has never been done before and is a huge tribute to the incredible training done by the keepers at the Columbus Zoo, including our good friend of the pod and, you know, personal good friend, Christy Nuss. So I'm really excited to see how this data gets used, and hopefully this all you know, works out really, really well. But I'm really excited to see animals in captivity doing this kind of research and helping their wild counterparts. Yay, Columbus. This is kind of cool. Bruce has arrived at Capron Park Zoo. Oh, I should probably explain who Bruce is. Bruce is a Philippine or Palawan porcupine that moved there from the San Antonio Zoo. That is a really, really rare species of porcupine to see in captivity. And now you can go and see him in the nocturnal building at the Capron Park Zoo. So that's really cool and really makes me want to head back to that zoo and check it out. And that brings us to
conservation, conservation, news time. Oh, yeah.
All right, so we're going to start off conservation news with an update on Toki, or Lolita, and the whole crazy whale thing that's still happening. I'm assuming you know what I'm talking about. If not, go listen to, like, all of my recent episodes, because we talk about this a ton. But Jim Irsay, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, who is weirdly involved in this whole thing, I guess being a billionaire, you get involved with stuff? I don't know. But announced this week that he is working hard with the Seaquarium and various lawyers and politicians and other stuff to get Toki out to Washington State in her sea pen in late September. Y'all, it's June, okay? Now, I'm not great at math, but I'm going to use my fingers here. So it's just starting June. So we'll do June, July, August, September. That's 4 months, technically less than 4 months from now. And he thinks that this whale is going to be able to move across the country into a sea pen, which, unless it's all being done very secretively, we don't think exists yet. There's no evidence that there's any progress on the sea pen. And to be ready to move her by September, there would have to be a lot of it. So maybe there's a top secret billionaire sea pen in Washington State somewhere, but I'm skeptical. That's why my voice is getting really high. Anyway, and I just can't wrap my freaking head around this. Also, Jim decided to say that her health is excellent and her spirits high. Okay, so right off the bat, her spirits are high. Sir, go, I'm not going to say that, yourself. That is freaking ridiculous for you to say from Indianapolis. That is such weird anthropomorphism and a lie. It just, you're bad billionaire. No, you should go buy Twitter from Elon or something. I don't know. This is ridiculous. But then on top of that, to say that her health is great, we know it's not great. We've had a guest on the podcast telling you about all of the crazy medicine that she has to take, and that if she doesn't take, she dies. And if we put out into the ocean in Washington, she will have a very hard time getting or not be able to get, and also could cause issues to the ecosystem out there. So this is just lie on lie on lie. And I have to admit, I really thought the whole thing was a publicity stunt, and I really thought this would have faded away by now. And maybe the Seaquarium is using Jim Irsay to do that, but, like, it's blowing my mind. And it's extra blowing my mind because this is actually an NFL owner that I kind of like in that world. So I'm a football fan, and he oftentimes says controversial things that, like, need to be said. And he often kind of goes against the grain and drops knowledge that is important for people to understand, whereas most owners do the, like, quiet billionaire thing and try to hide stuff. Also, completely unrelated to anything, but he spent a lot of his money on, like, the Beatles instruments from back in the day and stuff. Like, he has this whole amazing private musical instrument collection. Like, I feel like I would be friends with this dude, except that he's trying to kill a whale, and it's really pissing me off. So, hopefully he stops that, and then will someday let me come and drum on one of Ringo's former kits for talking some sense into him? We can hope. But let's really hope for what really matters, which is that Toki doesn't have this horrible thing happen and then, you know, die. And actually, you know what? If Jim Irsay is going to anthropomorphize, then so am I. Because the next story is about the fact that killer whales in the wild have learned to sink boats, especially yachts, off the coast of Gibraltar. There are some scientists who are studying the story that believe an orca that we know as Gladys is teaching other orcas to attack these boats after she was hit by a boat and came across as very hellbent on revenge. Now, this is a lot of anthropomorphism, but this is a real thing. Orcas are attacking boats around Gibraltar, and they believe it started with this one orca. And you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to say it. It is my official belief that these orcas have heard about the whole thing happening to Toki and are pissed off and are trying to sink super yachts hoping to take Jim Irsay out. I mean, look, we know that's not true. I know that's not true. You know that's not true. But it's absolutely as plausible as the idea that Toki will be ready to go to an imaginary sea pen in Washington in late September. So I'm sticking with that story, y'all. The federal government has declared that wildlife crime is a national security issue. And as such, they have created a new unit within the Homeland Security Department that will investigate the illegal trade in animals and work to thwart international criminal networks that traffic animals. There's been a lot of animal trafficking recently, so hopefully the Department of Homeland Security will be able to help put a stop to it. Madison Gas and Electric in Madison, Wisconsin, have a nesting box that they take care of that is used for nesting birds in the wild to, you know, go and nest there. That's what nest boxes are. I'm guessing you all knew that. But anyway, recently, two peregrine falcon chicks were hatched at the nest box there, and they have been named by Madison Gas and Electric Cream Puff and Cheese Curtis, not Cheese Curds, but Cheese Curtis. I love it so, so much. They actually know the names of the birds that are the parents, which are Trudy and Melvin, and they're all in the box together and all seems to be going really well. In fact, peregrine falcon expert Greg Septon put bands on the chicks so that they can be tracked throughout their lifetime. This is an awesome little conservation project that Madison Gas and Electric is able to fund and also use for some publicity, which is pretty darn cool. So I really respect that they do this, and I really love the names of the peregrine falcon chicks. And speaking of states that start with a W, okay, that was a weird transition. Still, a rare white bison calf was born. Bicelet. I like it. Anyway, a rare white bicelet was born at a state park in Wyoming earlier this month, and it is not an albino bison, but in fact, there is a very small amount of cattle genetics that lead to white bison. Roughly one in every 10 million bison born will be white. And in this case, the bicelet's mother is also white. So that, you know, it's the whole Punnett square genetics thing. But yeah, so that's really cool and exciting. Yay, neat, weird animals in apparently states that start with a W. Oh, and actually, speaking of white animals, although this case it is an albino animal, a rare albino panda has made an appearance in China's Wulong Nature Reserve. They found a picture on a camera trap of this panda back in 2019, and now it is back visiting with other pandas and hanging out and doing the thing, doing panda stuff. Yeah, so it's really interesting. As a matter of fact, it's kind of strange, but the video captured of this panda this time shows the panda visiting a mother panda with a cub. And normally a mother panda would get very aggressive in that situation, but in this case did not. So it appears maybe that it is a sibling type thing. Researchers think that is possible, but we can't say for sure. And obviously don't want to, you know, anthropomorphize there. But yeah, an albino panda bear. It's kind of cool. It's also very white. Like, I guarantee you this panda claps on 1 in 3. Just saying. In other news. See, that was me clapping on 1 in 3, pretending that I was the albino panda. You're welcome. Anyway, just one quick story for other news this week, which is that a video shows a bear breaking into a bakery in Avon, Connecticut, and eating 60 cupcakes before employees were able to shoo the bear away because, yes, there were employees there at the time. Taste by Spellbound is the name of the bakery where the 60 cupcakes were eaten. They were actually taken as employees were loading cupcakes into a van for delivery. The bear entered the garage, dragged out a box full of cupcakes, and then ate 60 of them, which is absolutely incredible. Actually, you know what? While I'm saying this to you all, I'm going to pull up that video right now because this is in Connecticut. And I think this was right around the time that I was recently at Beardsley. That's not a bear. That's just a video of me. Oh, man. Yeah, I know. This was a dumb joke. But hey, that's what you come here for, along with the zoo news, right? Anyway, that brings us to animal holidays.
Oh, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Hey!
All right, it is officially June, which, as I mentioned, is Pride, and is also Zoo and Aquarium Month, a very good month for this podcast, World Oceans Month, and Orca Month. Ironic, given the stories that we had in conservation news. Anyway, for your actual days this week, the third is Butterfly Education and Awareness Day and International Ungulate Awareness Day. The fourth is Hug Your Cat Day. The fifth is World Environment Day. The sixth is World Caribou Day. And the eighth is World Oceans Day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. All right, so there you have it, folks. I would like to say thank you to all of my patrons, especially my Red Panda level patrons, Laura Shank, Kristen Dickey, and Stephen Williamson, and remind you all that you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month by going to patreon.com/rawsafari. You'll get some cool bonus audio, and it's a good time. It's a good time, and I really appreciate it. Also, I would like to say thank you to everyone who contributed stories this week. Anya Keen, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Laura Shank, Emily Rockbuck, Elizabeth Charles, Jacob Newman, and Jacob Zinn. And I would like to point out that Elizabeth Charles was a first-time contributor and is from the UK. And is there possibly a more British name than Elizabeth and Charles? I don't think there is. I really don't think there is. As a matter of fact, while we are talking about contributors, I also want to say thank you to Amanda Berg, who kind of contributed a story, except that it was already after I was recording most of this, and also she really didn't know what the story was. But hey, good first effort, Amanda, and I know that you're going to come back with more. And for those listening, Amanda and I have become friends online, so I'm just picking on a friend. I don't throw random people who help me out under the bus, usually. Anyway, the last thing I have to tell y'all is that the words Newsy Credits backwards are Stiderk Yiswen. The Rossafari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo. Happy Pride!